Today's scripture reading will be Nehemiah chapter 1, verses 1 through 3. The words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah. Now it happened in the month of Chislev, in the 20th year, as I was in Susa the citadel, that Hanani, one of my brothers, came with certain men from Judah. And I asked them concerning the Jews who escaped, who had survived the exile, and concerning Jerusalem. And they said to me, "The remnant there in the province, who had survived the exile, is in great trouble and shame. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down, and its gates are destroyed by fire."
What did 9/11 mean to you? What do you remember from that day? Many of us remember the sight of the buildings falling. Perhaps some of us recall the sight of some of the planes as they flew across the New York skyline and collided with the buildings. For still others, you'll maybe recall the news coverage that day. No matter what channel you went to, including ESPN, everything was halted, wasn't it? All eyes, all hearts, all minds, and all prayers were focused upon New York City, general, and Manhattan in particular. A nation and a world stood with our mouths fallen open, down on our knees, devastated by all that we saw. This past week, I did a lot of research, not into the day itself, because quite frankly, September the 11th is a day that I don't see how I could ever forget it. But I did some investigation and some research into the days that followed. I was interested to discover a few things. For instance, I found it fascinating to learn that the last fire, that fire that began, that great ball of flame that erupted from those buildings there on September the 11th, the final flames were not doused and fully put out until December the 19th of 2001. It also astonished me to learn that 1.8 million tons of steel were hauled away from what we call Ground Zero, but what those who worked on the site called the pile. I was horrified to learn that by May the 10th of 2002, 19,435 body parts had been discovered and discarded from the site. I was astonished as I learned that it wasn't until May the 28th that the final steel beam that remained from the two towers, those mighty beacons of American independence, that final beam was cut that day and removed in a very formalized ceremony. I was furthermore moved to learn that it wasn't until June the 25th of 2002 that the final dump truck left with the final bit of debris. By the way, that dump truck constituted the 108,000th load that had gone before. What do you recall? What moved you? What continues to move you today as we say those all too familiar numbers, 9/11. I recall that a year out from the great tragedy, on September the 11th of 2002, I remember tuning in to CNN that day to watch the events, because you knew there would be one, didn't you? You knew there would have to be a ceremony, there would have to be a memorial. And I remember sitting there and watching, tears rolling down my face, as each and every person's name was read who died on those attacks. In the years since then, there has been so much work done there at the pile, there at Ground Zero. Today, there no longer stands two twin towers symbolizing America, symbolizing our independence, symbolizing the financial stability upon which we had built so much of our identity, so much of who we are, so much of who we wanted to be, so much of who we wanted to portray to this world. No, those buildings are long gone. As a matter of fact, much of the steel, that 1.8 million tons, has actually been reconstituted and implemented all around the world. No, there today stands a memorial. There today stands a reminder. There today stands a symbol. It was designed as such, purposed as such, implemented to stand for all time, to remind us of the nearly 4,000 people who died, reminding us of all of the firemen who went in and never came out, the policemen who rushed over and never left, the mothers who went to work and never came home, the fathers who departed that morning, never to return again. It stands to remind us that our nation stood on September the 11th of 2001, we stood in shambles. We stood terrified. We stood shaken to our very core. No matter where you lived in the United States of America that day, you were affected. You were moved. I myself was in the small town of Henderson, Tennessee at Freed Hardeman University. It affected me there. It affected those who were in Kalamazoo, Michigan. It affected those who were in San Francisco, California. It affected those who were in Des Moines, Iowa. It affected each and every one of us, because then it was truly that day that we understood that we were just people. Oh, we stood mighty. We stood tall. We were the United States of America. We stood for freedom. That beautiful torch still was held high, but that day our confidence was shaken, wasn't it? We wondered. We doubted. Each time a plane went over, what was your thought? Well, I know what mine was. Is it going to crash? Each and every time you were in a large assembly, you wondered, who has a gun? Who will try to take us out this time? On September the 11th, 2001, World Trade Centers 1 and 2 fell. But folks, they were just the symbol. What fell that day, in many ways, was the spirit of a nation. In the years since, sure, it's been rebuilt. It's been reconstituted. Many of the lessons, quite frankly, that we learned that day, it appears as though we've forgotten. Much of the togetherness that we enjoyed in the day after, those days after, that's been long since departed and torn apart. But nevertheless, there remains that memorial, that symbol, that spirit. Today we continue on with our sermon series, our drive down Route 66. We're going to actually pull off of the old biblical highway today at the exit, whose title is Nehemiah. And as we pull in, it's unlike any other place we've been thus far, because what we find is a similar scene to that which we found on September the 11th of 2001 here in the very same United States of America. As we pull off of the biblical highway, as we guide our cars along the exit, and as we look around, we see devastation. We see grief, we see mourning, we see walls in shambles. But I don't want you to just see the walls, because if you just see the walls, then we're no better off than we were on September the 11th. We're no better off than we were on that long ago day in 2001. If you just see the walls, then all you're seeing is the symbol. I want you to see the nation behind the walls. I want you to see what was really affected here, what was really in shambles. The walls were torn down, the walls were burnt, but it's the people that were scattered. It was the nation that needed healing. Folks, on September the 11th, 2001, yes, two buildings fell, but it was the spirit of our country that was affected. Those terrorists, they targeted that which we would be most affected by. The Pentagon was hit. Rumor has it that the White House should have been struck. But instead, a group of brave souls aboard Flight 93 fought back, and that plane went down in a Pennsylvania field. But our nation was the target, folks. In the book of Nehemiah, we see a similar theme. If we're not careful, all we focus on is they wanted to rebuild the walls. Folks, in rebuilding the walls, they rebuilt something else. They rebuilt that nation. They took their place back where they needed to be. Why did they need to be there? Because that's where God wanted them to be. Let me see if I can begin to tie some of this introduction together for you. Many folks today, if they were asked, who are in the Church of Christ, they would say that our, and I put this in quotes for those of you in the back, glory years were the 40s and the 50s in the church. Anytime you talk to someone, the phrase will often come up, well, back in the 50s. We're not living in the 50s anymore. The success and prosperity that the church experienced in the 40s and 50s, and by the way, yes, it was at one time, the fact that the Church of Christ was the fastest growing religious body in the United States of America. Today, by the way, we stand at number 14 on that list. Number 14. We're losing people. We're losing kids. We're losing teens. We're losing couples. We're losing preachers. We're losing elders. We're losing deacons. We're losing song leaders. We're losing Bible class teachers. We're losing in every conceivable way. Folks, what's happened today is that our nation, our Christian nation, the church that Jesus built, stands in shambles. Now, do we want to hear that? No. We want a positive Pollyanna lesson that says everybody is loved and we're all good. Folks, right now we're not all good. The church is in some trouble. I don't want you to just see it, though. I don't want you to just look at it and say, well, Rusty, it's just the walls. The walls are down. Let's rebuild the walls. Let's get a bigger hedge. Stop focusing on that. What we need to do is we need to turn our attention inward. We need to look around today at those who are in this room. We need to look inward to ourselves to see how will this be corrected. What we want to do is we want to follow the pattern followed in the book of Nehemiah. It's a wonderful, wonderful example, illustration, if you will, of how to rebuild a nation. And by the way, that is the theme of the book of Nehemiah. Rebuilding a nation, not a wall, rebuilding a nation. Church, this morning, I want us all to look down inside ourselves. I'm going to look down inside myself as your minister. I want you to look down inside yourselves as members, as elders, as deacons. I want you to look down inside yourself as fellow ministers. I want you to look down inside yourselves as Bible class teachers, song leaders, those that lead prayer. I want you to look down inside yourselves as those that serve in our food pantry. I want you to look down inside yourselves as those that show up every Monday for prime time. I want you to look down inside yourself. If you are a part of this congregation, a part of this body that meets here at Central, I want you looking down inside yourself today. I want you to look down inside yourself and I want you to ask yourself, how can we rebuild this nation? How can we fix what needs fixing, correct what needs correcting? How can we redirect and get this thing on track the way it needs to be on track? Two steps today. Two steps that we're going to examine. Two steps that were taken in the book of Nehemiah. Two steps that rebuilt a nation. Two steps that rebuilt walls. Two steps that rebuilt a relationship between God and His people. My hope, my prayer, is that we'll look around ourselves and we'll say, you know what, 14th on any list is not good enough. That means that there's 13 other religious bodies that are doing a better job than the Church of Jesus. And that shouldn't be acceptable to any of us. I want to encourage you. I want to invite you. Join me today and let's look at what it takes to really rebuild. First of all, rebuilding requires real remorse and resolve. Rebuilding requires real remorse and resolve. One of the things that blew me away as I went back last night, and I stayed up a little extra late watching some of the fascinating footage, YouTube videos from 9/11. What blew me away is that in video after video that I watched from that day, from September the 12th, from September the 13th, the 14th, is the pure, raw emotion of that time. There were times that you saw reporters, news anchors, who were live on television weeping openly. There were times that they would go to the ground zero, they would go to the pile, and as the cameras focused in, and as the microphones were overhearing, you heard grown men weeping, mourning, reduced to the tears of a child over what had happened there that day. Recall the words of George W. Bush as he visited the site. Recall the emotion of his speech. Recall the emotion of all of the politicians that stopped by. Recall the emotion of all of the sporting events in the days and weeks after it. I remember the first New York Mets baseball game that was played after 9/11. As the Mets were playing in Shea Stadium after it had reopened, they had one of the local NYPD police officers come in and sing in the seventh inning, "God Bless America." The roar that went up from that stadium at the conclusion of that song gives me chills to this day. The pure emotion, the remorse that was felt by a nation, the emotion that was felt by a nation, the weeping that was experienced was unlike anything that I had ever experienced in my life. We find a similar, yet slightly different, emotion and remorse taking place in the book of Nehemiah. If you've got your Bible, I want to invite you to open up to Nehemiah chapter 1. I want you to look first at the remorse, the real remorse that was required in order to rebuild the walls and the nation. We're going to get to the resolve in just a minute, but see the remorse first. You've got to see the remorse. Here we find in the book of Nehemiah chapter 1, beginning at verse 1, going all the way through verse 3, which Andy read for us, we find this great history beginning for us. We find where Nehemiah, who we would learn at the end of chapter 1, who is the cupbearer to the king, very important individual in the king's court, he is there and he meets some folks from, we'd say it, back home. And he inquires as to the remnants of Jerusalem. Wants to know, as he is in captivity, all the people are in captivity, how go things back home, is what he's asking. And what he learns shakes him and reduces him to real remorse. He learns that the walls have been torn down, that which stood tall now stands as rubble. That which was mighty has now been laid low. And I want you to, in particular, pay attention to verse number 4. There we learn that Nehemiah, this man who had risen to some prominence there in the king's court, he wept and he mourned. He fasted and he prayed. Look down at verse number 6. There, as he prays to God, he labels himself and says, "Lord, hear the cry of your servant. Hear the words of your servant, Lord." And he makes it clear, first of all, that they as a nation, they as a people, they had sinned. We're going to get to that in just a moment. But I want you to, in particular, pay close attention to how he closes out verse number 6. "I and my father's house have sinned." Folks, can I tell you what that right there is called in most counseling circles? That's called ownership. He's not saying, "Lord, all of those people, all of Jerusalem have sinned. They've all fallen short, but God, me and my father's house, we've done good." I have sinned, he says. My father's house has sinned. Has the nation sinned? Yes, yes. What's the lesson for you and I? Folks, we can't keep looking around at this group of people that are in this room and saying, well, this one's to blame, but I'm not. That one's to blame, but I'm not. Folks, rebuilding requires real remorse from all of us. If we are in a bad position, it's because we have all collectively gotten into a bad position. How'd they get in the bad position? Look at verse number 7 of Nehemiah chapter 1. It says there, we have acted corruptly. What have they also done? They have ignored or discarded the commandments, the laws, the rule that you gave to your servant Moses. Folks, you know what they've done in short? They've ignored God. They've set what God wanted, what God had expressed to them that He wanted. They have set that aside, and instead Israel, the descendants of Abraham and of Isaac and of Jacob, they began to pursue that which they wanted. Does this sound familiar to anyone else in this room? Because it sounds awfully familiar to me. From a ministerial standpoint, this looks like what we've got in the church today. I love that Sam pointed out to us today before he led us in this prayer that it's not about us. Folks, this is what's gotten us into the shape that we're in today. This is what's taken us from the top of the quickest growing list to number 14. It's that we've stopped worrying over what it is God wants and we've started thinking more about what it is that we want. Folks, it's going to require real remorse if we're going to rebuild this thing. But let me real fast before we move on to that second point this morning. Let me talk to you about resolve. Because remorse and resolve in this case, they work hand in hand together. There at 9/11, I was so moved to learn that in those first 48 to 72 hours, they were still attempting to remove those who had gotten trapped. Brethren, I'm going to be honest with you. I was blown away to learn that only 18 people were rescued. The final rescue took place at 12:30 on September the 12th when the 18th and final survivor was lifted out of the rubble. But what moved me truly was that in those first 72 hours, as they were trying to dig down and find as many as they could, they held out such great hope. But I was blown away to learn that at first, they weren't using cranes to move the beams and the rubble and the concrete. They were using small spades and 5-gallon buckets set up in brigades. One would dig, scoop, put it in the bucket, hand it to the next. Because they could not risk shifting something big that would collapse and kill more folks. Let me tell you what that shows me. These people were resolved to do this the right way. Do we have similar resolve today? I tell you what, Nehemiah sure had it. Nehemiah over Nehemiah chapter 2, verses 4 and 5. Fascinating passage there. Nehemiah chapter 1, he spends all of his time talking to God. Let me tell you, he prayed and he prayed and he showed real remorse. Now by the time chapter 2 rolls around, now remorse, that's good. You got remorse, you say, oh, I'm so sorry about the situation in which we find ourselves. But then you got to start putting action with it. So now remorse and resolve have got to work hand in hand together. The king notices his sad countenance. In other words, Nehemiah, what is wrong with you? You're not acting like yourself, Nehemiah. You're sad, Nehemiah. What is going on in your life? Talk to me. This is a big moment. Nehemiah says a prayer to God. I love that. Ask God for what? Courage. Lord, give me courage. I got to speak to the king and I got to speak openly and frankly. And what he asked the king for, and I love the resolve shown here. First of all, he spoke. Second of all, notice the resolve when he says, let me go that I, did y'all catch that? That I may rebuild the walls. He's not saying, King, High Lord and Master, if you will, cut away about 100 to 150 of your best and send them along their way. He says, send me that I may rebuild the walls. Folks, that's real resolve. He was resolved that this was going to get done. It wasn't going to get held up. He wasn't going to get slowed down. He wasn't going to be stopped. Now here's the thing. When Nehemiah was released, the king released him, he went on back. The king even gave him permission to use some great resources. But when he went back, this will blow you away because I know none of us in here have ever experienced this. But sometimes when you're doing God's work, people get in your way. Same thing happened to Nehemiah. Nehemiah got back, and guess what? There were people who did not want to see Nehemiah succeed. P.S. and B.T.W. There are people today that do not want to see the church succeed. There in Nehemiah chapter 4, in particular, verses 1 and 2, we see where some of the enemies that are going to be against Nehemiah and the work that he'll be doing, they come, and I love a couple of words that leap out at me there. They were angry. They were enraged, the ESV says. And then they began to call them names. Don't you love it when we get to the childish portion of the program? These folks come in and they said, these feeble Israelites, what are they going to do? Now, we sit in this room and we laugh about that today, don't we? Look at them. The best they can do is call them feeble. Church, can I ask you something? How many times have we stopped doing good works because somebody said something to us? How many times have we let the words of one halt good being done for many? Can I tell you what Nehemiah did not do? He resolved not to stop. Look down in verse number 6. This verse absolutely blew me away. The book of Nehemiah, I'm going to be honest with y'all, is probably my favorite of all of the Old Testament books. And I've read this over and over. I have never caught verse 6 until this week. The wall was finished. You know why? Because the people all had a mind to what? Work. Uh-oh. There he goes throwing around that W word. Folks, they had resolved in their minds, in their hearts, they were going to work. They weren't going to let anything stop them. Now, did that stop? Let's make this clear. The enemies of Israel, they saw, oh, well, they're resolved. We're just going to run away. No, that's not what they did. Of course they kept coming. But look down at Nehemiah chapter 4 and verse 14. There Nehemiah says, remember the Lord your God. He tells them, don't be afraid of them. Remember the Lord your God. He is a great and awesome God. Church, what a great description of the God we serve. He is great and He is awesome. Now, Nehemiah goes on to encourage him. He says, fight for your brothers. Fight for your sons, for your daughters, for your wives. Fight for your homes. Church, can I give you some exhortation this morning? I know sometimes in this world it's awfully hard to do the right thing. I know it's hard to continue on in the vein that God would have us to. I know that sometimes we get up and it's just not easy to get going. Much like Nehemiah, let me remind you of something. Remember the Lord your God. He is a great and awesome God. Church, fight. Fight for your brothers and sisters in Christ. Fight. Fight for your sons and your daughters. Fight. Fight for your husbands and your wives. Fight. Fight for your homes, your houses. Fight for this nation. Fight, church, for that which God has given to us. Resolve today to rebuild. There is a second point that I want to get to just quickly today. Rebuilding does require real remorse and resolve. But rebuilding, secondly and finally today, also requires reuniting. Now instantly, whenever those of a certain generation see the word reuniting, they think reunited, it feels so good. At least half of you were thinking it, so let's just go ahead and get it on the table. Reunited, and it feels so good. But church, let me ask you this. That's an old song we sing. It's an old, catchy, cheesy song that we sing. But so often when we come together, it doesn't look like we're happy and nothing feels good. We get together, we got frowns up, we got smiles turned upside down. By the way, that's a frown. We've got angry eyes. We've got a frustrated look on our face. We're so mad and we're, as my mama used to say, so bent out of shape that we don't look like we want to be reunited with anything. Let me tell you something. To rebuild that which once was strong, it's going to require us reuniting, church. It is essential. Go over to Nehemiah chapter 3. Nehemiah chapter 3. We're going to spend the majority of the remainder of our lesson right there. I've got two verses, but I'm going to point out a number of things to you from that chapter. I want you to notice a phrase that appears over and over and over and over again in Nehemiah chapter 3. Here we find where the work has begun. The reality of the situation is what the reality of the situation is. The walls are down. The nation is in disarray. Remorse has been expressed. Resolve is now being put to the test. Here comes the work. I want you to notice what you do not find in Nehemiah chapter 3. You'll recall now, Nehemiah chapter 2, Nehemiah told the king, "Let me go that I may rebuild the walls." I want you to notice what you do not find in Nehemiah chapter 3. You do not find him doing it by himself. You do not see this chapter saying, "And Nehemiah constructed first the gate, and second the archways, and third the walls, and fourth put guards around the..." No, it doesn't say that. I want you to notice phrases that recur over and over. But notice first, we'll just pick a couple arbitrarily here. Verse number 2 of Nehemiah chapter 3. There we see the phrase I want you to see is, "And next to them." And next to them. This one did work, but they weren't doing it by themselves because "and next to them" were these over here. Jump down to Nehemiah chapter 3, verse number 4. Again, notice the phrase, "And next to them." And next to them. And what? And next to them. Folks, these people were united and reunited. They had a common goal, a common purpose that was in mind. Now, was this work going to be easy? No, it's not. This was going to be hard stuff. They had enemies fighting against them. They had people calling into question their ability. Remember, these are the same people that were called feeble. And next to them was the answer, though. Church, let me tell you something. Rebuilding's not going to be easy for us either. It never is. It's hard. But I want to show you something. For our final verse this morning, go over to Nehemiah chapter 4 one more time. We're going to note verses 19 and verse 20. There, as Nehemiah was rallying his troops, as he was giving them the instructions that they would need, as he was making sure that they understood the difficult task that lay ahead, I want you to notice what he said about the work. He said, "The work is great." By the way, that doesn't mean yay. The work is great means this is a big job, folks. And we are widely spread. I know that oftentimes we feel like that our Christian duty is met by showing up for Sunday morning service. Let's make sure once and for all we understand what the purpose of us coming here today is. We're here today to worship God. We're here today to lift His name. We're here today to find some encouragement for ourselves. Can I tell you when the work begins? The work begins out there. There's a world that needs to hear this. Now, it's going to be a great job. Not yay great. There's parts of it that are yay great. But it's a big task. And we're going to be widely spread. But I want to give you the same exhortation that Nehemiah gave to his people. Hear that rally. And know that the Lord our God, you know what? He is still fighting for us. Church, we need to rebuild. That's as plain as this old boy knows how to tell you. We need to rebuild. We once were mighty, and now at times, I'll be honest with you, we're mighty sad. But it's not too late. It's not too late. Requires real remorse. Folks, we got to be able to see it and be able to be sad about it. It's going to take real resolve. We've got to resolve that we are going to stick to the fight. No matter what comes, we're going to be faithful through all that may come our way. And then we've got to be reunited. Come together in a common cause. Let's work and next to them, and next to them, and next to them. Let me ask you who are here today. Are you ready to rebuild? You say, Rusty, realistically, I need to be honest with you. I've never been a part of this. Well, then today's the day. This is the day. This is the moment. Let's set aside all of that. You know, one day in the future, distant future. No. Let's set that aside. Today's the day. This is the time, this is the place. You know what you've been given today? You've been given a moment in time by God. Don't take it for granted. Instead, take advantage of it. You hear this morning, maybe you say, well, Rusty, at one point I was faithful. I was working as hard as I could. And to be honest, I kept hearing, he's too feeble too often. Man, words do hurt. Greatest lie that I think that we let our kids believe is that words don't hurt. Whew. Words hurt, and they hurt bad. But I tell you some words that are going to feel mighty good if we're faithful. And that is, enter in, good and faithful servant. If you're separated from your God today and you need to make things right between you and your God, today's the day for you. If there's anything that we can do for anyone here this morning, we invite you. Won't you come? As together we stand and sing the song of invitation.